We're continuing the book of Shoftim, the book of Judges, and Shimshon had his hair cut, and the Philistines grab him, and he thinks he'll overcome them, but he can't, and they gorge out his eyes. This is a punishment for his going after his eyes. As much as there was a good reason, there was still something that wasn't 100%, and they take him to prison, and they have him there turning a mill, working on grinding. And our sages say that the term to grind is an allusion to something else, that every man would bring his wife to be intimate with Shimshon. Shimshon was unusual in that his capacity was limitless. His seed, the Talmud says, was like a flowing river. And each one wanted to have a brave son, a warrior like Shimshon. And that's why throughout Tanakh, we see it in the book of Job. When Job discusses his wife committing adultery, so Job calls it, my wife should be the mill of someone else. And that's because the pistol is beating into the mortar, into the... So that's an allusion, a clean way of alluding to someone being intimate with someone. So that's why our sages had a tradition that when it says Shimshon was grinding the flour, it really means he was doing something else there. So... The time comes when they all gather to bring an offering to their Dagon, to their idol that's half human, half fish, and they see Shimshon out in his prison in a distance, and they're all rejoicing, and they say, bring him here, let's hear some stories about his bravery, and let's all laugh at him. So they're all getting drunk, and they bring in Shimshon from the prison. And they tell him, tell us some stories, and then he starts telling stories, and everyone's laughing. And they stand him up between two of the pillars that the whole building is resting on. And Shimshon asked the lad, guide me to where the pillars are exactly, so I could lean on them. Remember, Shimshon's a cripple. So he puts his two hands around them, and he prays to Hashem and says, please give me strength one more time. Let me take revenge for one of my eyes. And this is an interesting concept we have, that he asks revenge of one of his eyes. Well, if the Talmud tells us, the Mishnah says that he had his eyes gorged out because he sinned, so why should that be a merit in his favor? So here we see an important concept, that when a person suffers, even if on one level he deserved it, on another level, suffering at the hands of the enemies gives a certain merit. Our sages say, there was once a sage that passed away and then came back to life. He was out for a few seconds. So he saw the other world, and they asked him, what'd you see there? So he has a whole story. One of the things he says is that Haruge Malchus, people that were killed by the enemy kingdom just because they were Jews, they're so high that no one can touch them. So what did they do? You know, they were just killed. They didn't do anything. No. We have a tradition that when a person is tortured or killed just for the fact that he's a Jew, that shoots him up in the heavens. So Shimshon says, let me have revenge from one of my eyes. He says, the other eye I'm keeping for my own merits in the world to come. I suffered at their hands. So we see that's a great merit, even though he wouldn't have suffered if he didn't deserve it. But once he suffered at their hands, that does give him merits in the world to come. So he's granted his wish, and he pulls the pillars, and the house comes crashing down, and he kills more people in his death than he did in his life. Thousands of people are killed among the Philistines. His relatives come down and pull out his body. And for 20 years, the Philistines are still trembling. They never find Samson's body in the rubble. So they figure, he's such a giant, he made it out. He's still alive. So for 20 years, the Philistines kept looking over their shoulder. Maybe Samson's still going to come and beat us up. So that's our tradition. That's why the verse says he led the Jewish people, he avenged the Jewish people for 20 years. Why does it restate it? It tells us that 20 years after his death, the Philistines were still worried he's around, and they behaved differently to us. Now, the book of Judges concludes with two stories, and our tradition is that these two stories really happened in the beginning of the period of Judges, but the Shmuel, the prophet who wrote Shoftim, didn't want to begin the book of Judges with these two terrible stories, so they were written here then. The simple reading is that they happen now, and that the book is concluding with a message that things were not up to par, things were not where they should have been, because there was no central leadership, there was no king. And this is a lead-in to the next book of Samuel, the book of Shmuel, where we have our final two leaders, Eli the Kohen and then Shmuel, and then we say we need a king. So then that's the simple understanding of what's going on here. So we have the story of a man named Micha, whose mother has 1,100 silver coins stolen from her, and she takes a vow that whoever stole it should be cursed. And he hears this vow, and he comes to his mom, and he says, okay, I took it. And she says, okay, I took a vow. I thought you took it. That's why I cursed whoever took it in front of me. But I want you to be blessed. And she says, I designated it for you to make yourself an idol and a special molten figure that you could access the stars with. And I'm giving it back to you. So she takes 200 coins and she gives it to a silversmith who makes a special idol and a special figurine. And Micha sets up in his house a pagan house of worship. And the Navi here tells us a famous verse: there was no king in Israel, everyone did whatever they thought was right. Ordinarily we assume that's a pasuk to our detriment. That's a pasuk that says, look at what happened. Because the Navi says it twice. Once over here, and once in the next story when there's a woman that's raped by the masses. So the juxtaposition seems to indicate a negative message. But there's also a positive message. Look around. What people can live without a king, without a central authority? There's also a positive message hidden here, that these were the exceptions. The people in general were tremendously moral. They were on a high level to live without a king, without a central authority. So Micha has one great attribute, and that is that he is machnis orchim. He always takes in guests. And that's why Micha is going to have tremendous merits. Even though he has a pagan house of worship, but he is machnis orchim, he's always taking in guests. So there's a Levite who is Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. Okay, here I have to ask a question. How many people want us to speed through the Navi, and how many people want depth?
Depth?
Okay. So our story begins with Moshe coming out to Midian. We have a tradition that when Moshe came to Midian, so Jethro, according to one tradition, tried to starve him to death. According to, he put him in jail, didn't bring him food, and Zipporah would always bring him food, and she kept him alive. According to another tradition, Jethro had spent his life searching truth until after being a priest for all kinds of pagan religions, he finally came to monotheism. And when he meets Moshe, so this is what he's been praying for, because who's going to marry his daughter? This filthy monotheist, no one liked him. And that's why you see everyone was picking on his daughters. So this was a great shidduch, you know, Moshe.
Where did you get the fact that he was against Moshe when the first time he's introduced was at the well, wasn't it?
So there's a whole medrash about many years in between. Moshe goes from being 15 to 80. You know, Moshe leaves Egypt at age 15. He comes back at 80. What?
He went to Midian, and then he was in the shepherding business for his father-in-law. But you're saying there was a period of time before he was discovered at the well when he might still have been in Midian, and Yitro might have been.
No, so that not. But our sages, according to one medrash, when Yisro invites Moshe in and has the whole meal with him and hears that Moshe's a fugitive from Paro, so one understanding is that Yisro said, well, so am I. Yisro also fled from Paro's castle. So it was a good shidduch. The other understanding is that Yisro said, you kidding? I'm going to be dead meat if I'm caught housing you. And he threw him into a dungeon and he didn't give him any food. And for 6 months he thought Moshe died. And Zipporah fell in love with Moshe, and she'd bring him food every day. After 6 months, she comes to her father and says, you know, what are you ever going to do with that man you left in the dungeon? And her father says, he's dead meat. And she says, yeah, because I walked by there, and it sounded like he was alive. So he says, can't be. 6 months down there, impossible. He goes and checks. He sees Moshe's alive. So he says, you must be an angel. He takes him out. And tells him, okay, you know, you know, my daughter found you alive. Is she a good shidduch for you? And then that's another medrash. Right. There are different traditions. So at anyways, the traditions aren't talking literal. I mean, it could be there are certain messages or sages want us to get from these stories. So the medrash says that Yisro said to Moshe, I did research. I went through every pagan god until I came to monotheism. I'm willing to let you marry my daughter, but You have to let your kids discover God for themselves. You have to let the kids go through every pagan religion and then discover that monotheism is right. Why should they be spoon-fed? Then they'll never know what else is out there. And Moshe said, nope. And the Medrash words it differently. The Medrash says, Yisrael said to Moshe, if you want to marry my daughter, one of your children you have to designate to Avodah Zarah. And then the Medrash says, Moshe finally acquiesced. The commentaries say there's no way Moshe acquiesced to giving up a child to pagan religion. So the commentaries say what it means is that the two aspects of how do you educate a child. Where Moshe says you teach him from scratch what's right, and Yisrael said no. Let him discover everything and then let him discover what's right. And that the Medrash is calling bringing up a child to paganism. Because by exposing a child to certain things, you're really hurting him. A child doesn't have to be exposed to every abnormality in the world in order to realize what's right. Bring him up with what's right. Life will already expose him to other things, and using his head will expose him to other things. But you have to give him a solid foundation on what's right. That's what Moshe held, but he erred in giving in. He said, okay, one kid I'm going to let you do that with. And that child turned out okay, but the repercussions were paid when that child had kids, and that is this Levite. This Levite that is now going to become a priest in Micha's house for paganism, this Levite was really a grandson of Moshe. But the Navi covers it up, as we'll see. The Navi sticks in an extra nun. It says Gershon ben Menashe. It sticks in an extra nun. But the tradition is that you write that nun raised to show you it's an insert. We don't want to write that he was Moshe's grandson, so we write he was Menashe's grandson. But that nun is written out of line to show you really he is Moshe's grandson. Now, when Moshe brought up his kids and grandkids, he told them, you're better off working for Avodah Zarah than asking people for handouts. So Levites really need this message because they're supposed to get the gifts from the Israelites. So Moshe told them, you're better off working for Avodah Zarah than getting a handout. So what did Moshe mean? Moshe said, you're better off working for Avodah, work, which is Zarah, foreign to you. You know how to plow a field, so work in a vegetable garden, work in an orchard. It's Zar, it's strange to you. I don't care. Better do work that's strange to you than get handouts. What did this grandson hear? Better do Avodah Zarah than get handouts. So he's fine. He comes to this house and he sees that Micha is looking to hire. There's a big sign outside, looking to hire. Okay, there wasn't. But at any rate, he comes visiting. And he's traveling and Micha is always having guests. So when he comes into Micha's house, Micha asks him, what are you up to? He says, I'm a Levite. I'm traveling from Beit Lechem. I'm looking for a place to live. So Micha says, stick around. Why don't you be my teacher? You be my priest. I'll give you 10 silver coins and clothing, and I'll give you food. So the Levite is fine. Hey, this is what Grandpa Moshe taught me. So he sticks around, and Micha takes good care of him. And Micha says, boy, must be everything's going to work out just right. Because look, God sent me a Levite. Oh, fantastic Levite to be my priest. So here you see how people can mislead themselves. He's going for paganism, and he says, must be everything's right, because God sent me a Levite. So people are always looking for signs. You can find signs in everything. So, my tradition is, if you're looking for a sign, you'll find it. But, okay, so...
Should you be looking for signs?
Should you be looking for signs? That's a class in and of itself. Remind me, Thursday night? Yeah, I'm happy to discuss it Thursday night, okay? The tribe of Dan was still looking to solidify and ensure that they have a large territory. They didn't yet have a large territory, so they sent out 5 spies to spy out the land and find a place to settle down. So they're traveling and they come next to Micha's house and they recognize the Levite. They ask him, what you doing here? And he tells them, here's what's going on. I'm a priest for this house of worship here. So they tell him, okay, so ask the forces that be whether we'll be successful or not. So the Levite tells them, yeah, you guys go in peace. God should be with you. Notice he says God. He didn't believe in this. Every time people would come and offer him a sacrifice, he'd say, I take your money. But this is all nonsense, this paganism. He wasn't into it, and he tried to convince people, this is ridiculous, don't go worshipping this. But he was into making money too, he liked money. So they come to the city of Laish. Laish means a lion. And they see a people sitting there, they have no peace treaties with anyone, they aren't prepared for war, but they have a great territory, and they live all the way in the north, what's called today the Chatzbani. That's a territory where the Jordanian waters come out of. And it's a great fertile area. They come back to the tribe and they say, wow, we found a great territory. Come, let's go conquer that. It's going to be easy prey. The people over there have everything, and they're not protected, and they have no peace treaties, and it'll be easy to conquer them. So they take 600 soldiers. They travel northward. They're traveling right near us in Kiryat Yarim, Telstone. And as they're traveling north, they pass by Micha's house. And the five spies tell the people, you know, there's an idol in this house over here. And there's a priest. And let's go pick him up and take him with us. So we'll set up a synagogue. We come up. We have our territory. We'll set up a house of worship. So they come in. You know, 600 men standing armed to the teeth. And the five men come in and they grab the idol and all the other paraphernalia that's there. And the priest is standing there watching. And the priest asks them, what are you guys doing? So they say, shh, come with us. You'll be our priest. Why should you stick around here? You have a small following. Come with us, you'll have a whole tribe. So he goes with them. And as they're traveling, Micha finds out that he was robbed. So he charges, he follows after them, and he says, what's going on? So the armed men turn around and look at him and say, what you getting all excited about? And Micha looks at the armed men, and he has to make a decision. What's he going to do now? And that's where we're going to pick up his Hashem next week.